This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. On April 22nd, a group known as Heritage Action held a private donor meeting in Tucson, Arizona. Here's what Executive Director Jessica Anderson boasted to her donors.
So we worked quietly with the Iowa State Legislature. We got the best practices to them. We helped draft the bills. We made sure activists were calling the state legislators, getting support, showing up at their public hearings, giving testimony. And we were able to get three provisions in the larger election integrity bill that were directly written by the Heritage recommendation.
Anderson is talking about a new Iowa law restricting voting access. Iowa has no history of election irregularities. However, the new law reduces the period of early voting down to 20 days from 29. Polls close an hour earlier. A county election official is banned from sending out absentee ballot request forms unless a voter asks for one. And those absentee ballots must now be received by elections officials by the time polls close in order to be counted. And in Iowa, elections officials can now be held criminally liable if they fail to carry out guidance from the Iowa Secretary of State.
So Iowa's huge victory. Governor Reynolds signed the bill on March 8th. Little fanfare. Honestly, nobody even noticed. My team looked at each other and were like, it can't be that easy. It can't be that easy.
Again, that's Jessica Anderson, executive director of a group called Heritage Action, in an April 22nd meeting in Tucson, Arizona. Now, Ari Berman covers voting rights for Mother Jones. He and fellow journalist Nick Sergi obtained that April video. And Ari joins us now. Ari, welcome to On Point. And first of all, what is Jessica Anderson talking about? The it of it can't be that easy.
Hi, Meghna. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. The it refers to Heritage Action's campaign in key battleground states to pass these new voting restrictions. And in this video we obtained in conjunction with Documented, she talks very openly about how the group is writing what she calls model legislation, restricting voting access in places like Georgia and Iowa and Texas. And she says in the video, we actually draft the bills for them. Or she says we have a sentinel, that's their name for their volunteers, on our behalf, give them the model legislation so it has that grassroots from the bottom up type of vibe. Mm. That's how she's talking about this model legislation restricting voting access. And she talks in great detail about this. She says that the group wrote three provisions in the Iowa law, eight provisions in the Georgia law, 19 provisions in the Texas law. So this is really evidence, at least according to Heritage Action's own words, that they are leading this massive orchestrated campaign to write these bills, to pass these bills, and then to defend these bills.
So this begins to answer a question that a lot of our listeners have had for some time. And how did so many of these bills crop up seemingly overnight with so many similar provisions? So let's go through your reporting here, Ari, with quite a fine-tooth comb, because you and Nick go very deep here. First of all, who is Heritage Action?
Heritage Action is the sister organization of the Heritage Foundation, which is a leading conservative think tank that's been around a very long time, dating back to the 1970s, rose in prominence under Ronald Reagan, wrote a lot of the policies for the Trump administration. Heritage Action for America was formed as basically their political arm, that Heritage is more of a think tank. Heritage Action is more of a political group that tries to get that policy implemented. And so former Heritage Foundation President Jim DeMint described it as a 1-2 punch. Basically, Heritage Foundation writes the policies, and then Heritage Action makes it happen and really works with the states and conservative activists in the states to implement these conservative policies. And they've made restricting voting rights one of their top causes this year.
Okay, but as a dark money group, they don't have to reveal who their donors are.
Neither group has to reveal their donors. The Heritage Foundation raised almost $122 million in their last annual report. They disclosed almost none of their donors. Heritage Action raised $11 million in their latest annual report. They have released almost none of their donors. There's a little bit of evidence of who their donors are. For example, Heritage Action at one point took $500,000 from Charles and David Koch, the big conservative billionaires. But by and large, no, we don't know who is funding these groups. And that's one of the things that's alarming a lot of people, is you have a dark money group with secret donors basically bragging to those same donors who we don't know who they are, that they are passing legislation that's going to make it harder to vote for millions of Americans.
Okay, so one more note about how long the Heritage Foundation's interest in voting has endured, because you remind us in your story here that appeared in Mother Jones that Heritage Foundation co-founder Paul Weyrich in 1980, I believe, pretty clearly expressed his views on voting access. Can you remind us about that?
Yeah, there's this really incredible meeting where Paul Weyrich, who's really one of the founders of the modern conservative movement, talks to a meeting of evangelical leaders in Dallas in 1980 who are supporting Ronald Reagan. And he says very bluntly, "I don't want everybody to vote." He says, "Elections are not won by a majority of people. They have never been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down." And I believe that is the motivating factor for the voting restrictions we are seeing right now, that Republicans feel like the higher turnout we saw in 2020, the highest turnout in 120 years, was bad for them politically. I'm not even sure that's true, but I believe it's the perception. And therefore, they believe they have more leverage when the electorate is smaller, whiter, more conservative, as opposed to when the electorate is larger, more diverse, and more progressive. And Paul Weyrich stated that very clearly in 1980.
So Paul Weyrich, again, co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, and now we have, as of 2010, Heritage Action, again, which you talked about sort of as the arm that takes the ideas from the foundation and tries to enact them in policy in various states. Now, we reached out to Heritage Action, to Jessica Anderson, to request that she would be on the show today. She was unavailable, but Heritage Action did provide this statement. The statement says, quote, "Heritage Action is proud of our work to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. That work begins at the state level through our grassroots and continues through state legislatures across the country. Left-wing media who want to spin up panic and paranoia instead of focusing on real efforts to save our elections should be ignored." End quote. That's the statement from Heritage Action. Well, here is a moment again from that April 22nd meeting, the video of which Ari Berman and Nick Sergi obtained. Again, you'll hear Jessica Anderson talking about Heritage Action's voting efforts to change voting laws in many states. And here's what she says.
"And so we've been able to put everyone together on a Tuesday call where we literally give marching orders for the week ahead for groups like SBA List and APP and Tea Party Patriots and Freedom Works. Also, we're singing from the same song sheet of the goals for that week and where the state bills are across the country. From there, as we create this echo chamber, we're working with these state legislators to make sure they have all of the information they need to draft the bills. In some cases, we actually draft them for them, or we have a sentinel on our behalf give them the model legislation. So it has that grassroots, you know, from the bottom up type of vibe."
So, Ari, a couple questions here. First of all, in a sense, what Heritage Action is doing here is not unusual at all. I'm sitting here in Massachusetts, and several years ago, we went through a very expensive fight over the question of charter schools. And it was supposedly there was a ballot measure that was supposedly grassroots, but it was very well funded by dark money groups who only had a handful of donors. It was quite well orchestrated from outside of the state. So I'm really familiar with these kinds of political efforts. So what Heritage Action is doing is not uncommon, is it?
It's not uncommon, but what I would say is it's an intensification of an existing strategy. And it's unique in the sense that we just had a situation where Donald Trump tried to overturn the election. And now there are a record number of bills that are following that attempt to try to overturn the election. And Heritage Action is at the forefront of trying to weaponize that big lie. And the way that these quote-unquote election integrity measures have been portrayed by their supporters in places like Georgia and places like Texas is that they're just responding to their constituents' concerns about the election. Well, in fact, what you have here is a top conservative group essentially writing the model legislation or working with state legislators to write them. And you have a group in Washington that is exporting this agenda to the states, as opposed to this is something happening organically in the states. And you have so many states in such a short period of time drafting such similar pieces of legislation that follows an attempt to try to overturn an election, and that makes it more difficult to vote. So, of course, this isn't unprecedented, but given the context in which it is occurring, the context of trying to subvert and overthrow American democracy, I think it really takes on a lot of added significance if you understand both what came before Heritage Action's effort and how they are trying to intensify what Donald Trump was trying to do in 2020.
Now, a leader of a political action group can tell her big donors whatever she wants. But the question is it true? Because after your reporting came out, Republican officials in Iowa in particular, because we started with that Iowa example, they railed against Heritage Action for claiming that they wrote the law.
Yeah, that was a really interesting twist to this whole story. Iowa Republicans attacked Heritage pretty aggressively, and they said that they were either lying that they helped write this bill, or they had committed ethics violations because they didn't register as lobbyists. And in fact, the top Democrat in the Iowa House has filed ethics complaints against Heritage Action and the Heritage Foundation. And a watchdog group in Iowa has also begun their own investigation into the group and whether they contacted the Iowa governor and didn't disclose their lobbying.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk about Georgia and other states and the pattern that we're seeing across the country. Ari Berman is our guest. He's written an article called Dark Money Group Brags About Writing GOP Voter Suppression Bills Across the Country. More in a moment. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today we're talking with Ari Berman. He's a senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. And he and co-author Nick Sergi recently put out a fascinating story headlined Leaked Video, Dark Money Group Brags About Writing GOP Voter Suppression Bills Across the Country. It's a deep dive into the actions of a group known as Heritage Action. Ari, by the way, is also author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. Well, let's listen to how governors in some or lawmakers in other states where there have been moves to change voting laws, what they've been saying. For example, in May, here's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who signed into law legislation restricting voting.
So right now, I have what we think is the strongest election integrity measures in the country. I'm actually going to sign it right here. It's going to take effect. So there you go. Bill is signed.
And last week in Texas, the state legislature tried and failed because Democrats walked out of the legislature to pass a bill like that in Florida and Georgia. Republican Texas State Representative Travis Clardy supported the bill.
There are some great pieces of legislation and some things we worked on that I think are going to make elections fairer, more open, more transparent. That's the goal here.
Now, Ari, before we go back into your recent reporting about Heritage Action, I'd actually like to take a step back here and ask you a very, very important question. And that is specifically when we use this language about the legislation is designed to restrict voting or reduce access to the ballot. Specifically, what do we mean? Because I think part of the problem here is so much of these discussions happen with generalizations. And I'd love to get, you know, I'd love to put facts to those generalizations. So what are the provisions in these bills that are reducing or restricting voting access?
Well, there's so many different provisions in these bills that restrict voting access. And that's one of the things that makes them unique from bills in earlier years, is that they don't just have one or two provisions that restrict voting access. They have 16, 17, 18 provisions that restrict voting access. It starts with making it harder to vote by mail, making it harder to get mail ballots, for example, by prohibiting election officials from sending out mail ballot request forms, making it harder to return mail ballots by curtailing or getting rid of things like mail ballot drop boxes that were very popular in 2020, making it harder to have your mail ballot count because of new ID requirements or tougher laws for signature matches, or giving election officials more authority to throw out ballots. So things like that for mail voting in places like Iowa and Texas, they have cut early voting or proposed cuts on early voting. In a bunch of states, they have made it easier for partisan poll watchers to monitor the polls, which could lead to a voter intimidation. They have restricted the ability of counties to accept donations from nonprofit groups that allowed them to open more polling sites and recruit more poll workers and have more drop boxes in 2020. In some states, like in Georgia and in the proposed legislation in Texas, they would actually make it easier potentially to overturn elections or not to certify election results by giving gerrymandered legislatures more power over how elections are conducted, or making it easier for candidates to petition judges to throw out election results. So there's a lot of different ways in these bills make it harder to vote. And the proponents claim that they're about election integrity, but I think when you look at the details, you see all of these different ways in which voting access is being rolled back.
Well, and I mentioned earlier in Iowa that bill, that law now, makes it such that elections officials can be held criminally liable. They can be charged with felonies if they fail to carry out guidance from the Iowa Secretary of State. So bringing in the possibility of criminal charges for elections officials, is that something that we're seeing more than just in Iowa?
Yes, that was one key part of the legislation in Texas. The legislation that was proposed and almost passed in Texas would actually make it a state jail felony if an election official gave a mail ballot request form to a voter who didn't ask for one. That is truly, truly radical, because remember, there's a bunch of states in which both red and blue states in which election officials send out absentee ballot request forms for voters. There's a number of states in which election officials send actual mail ballots to all voters. Doing that would be a felony for election officials in Texas, which I believe will have a chilling effect on being able to recruit election workers. There's also a provision that says that if election officials will essentially not allow partisan poll challengers to be able to monitor the polls to the extent that they like, the poll officials, the poll workers, could be charged with a crime, not the people that are being accused of intimidation. So there's a lot of different ways through these bills that just routine election administration, things that you do to try to make it easier to vote, to increase turnout, would be criminalized under these laws.
I mean, that's very much highlighted by what you just said, that there are proposals out there that an election official could go to jail, could face jail time for simply giving someone a ballot.
Yeah, and remember, a lot of this stuff tracks with Trump's grievances about the election. Trump made a lot of false claims about the election. And one of the things that he did is he personally attacked election officials, both Republican and Democratic election officials in places like Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania. They got death threats. It was very, very difficult for them to do their jobs. And now, basically, those election officials could be sent to jail simply for trying to make it easier to vote. The idea that we would send an election official to jail for trying to increase the use of mail ballots, for trying to help their constituents be able to vote, I think is deeply anti-democratic, no matter what your political affiliation is. And a lot of election officials are nonpartisan. They just want people to vote. They just want to increase voter access. And they feel like they are being targeted for no good reason right now, other than the fact that Trump lost the election, tried to overturn it, and scapegoated them for trying to do their jobs.
Well, let's listen to the response from Republican lawmakers when they're faced with this assertion that these bills are designed to reduce access to the ballot. This is Republican Iowa State Representative Bobby Kaufman, who co-authored Iowa's now new elections law.
This bill is about election integrity. The ultimate voter suppression is a very large swath of the electorate not having faith in our election systems. And for whatever reason, political or not, there are thousands upon thousands of Iowans that do not have faith in our election systems. Finally, I want to push back against the false narrative. This election bill is not about voter suppression. Not one single vote will be suppressed, and saying it repeatedly does not make it the case.
Ari Berman, you want to respond to that?
Well, I think the ultimate voter suppression is preventing people from voting. And I think the way to increase voter confidence is to tell people the truth about what happened, to tell people that the 2020 election was the most secure election in American history. We had the highest turnout in 120 years in 2020, and we had the most secure election in American history in 2020. So there's no trade-off between access and security. We can have both, and the 2020 election showed that. And I don't know how cutting early voting, giving people less time to vote, sending election officials to jail for trying to mail out absentee ballot request forms. I don't know how that increases election integrity. To me, that's going to undermine election integrity when people feel like their votes are not going to be counted, and they could actually be sent to jail for trying to increase voting access. That's going to have a chilling effect on election integrity across the board. And the fact that so many states in such a short period of time have changed their laws based on a lie is the ultimate way to undermine election integrity and to give people less confidence that their votes will be counted.
I'm talking today with Ari Berman. He's senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. And we're talking about his story, co-authored with Nick Sergi in Mother Jones, about a leaked video from a dark money group known as Heritage Action. And in the video, Heritage Action brags about writing GOP voter suppression bills across the country. So, Ari, let's refocus on this video that you obtained. Again, it was from an April 22nd meeting in Tucson, Arizona, where Heritage Action was talking to its biggest private donors. And in that tape that we just played from Iowa State Rep. Bobby Kaufman, who talks about the electorate not having faith in the election system. In fact, that came up in this April 22nd meeting from Heritage Action, the idea that that efforts that they might have had underway for years were able to break through because of the election misinformation from 2020. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think that's such a critical point, Meghna, because Heritage had these list of policy recommendations to make voting more difficult for a long time. But what they say in this video is that the false claims by Donald Trump gave them the opening to push these policies to restrict voting access. That the fact that Trump attacked mail voting, the fact that Trump attacked mail ballot drop boxes, the fact that Trump tried to say that poll challengers weren't given access, that gave Heritage a huge opening to go into states and say, we have policies that are going to make it harder to vote by mail, that are going to reduce mail ballot drop boxes, that are going to increase access for poll challengers. All of these things that we've been wanting to do for decades, here's our opportunity to do it. And Jessica Anderson, the executive director of Heritage Action, says very clearly in the video that she has a fierce fire in her belly to right the wrongs of November. So this is all about what happened in the last election and trying to weaponize Trump's lies about the election to pass policies to make it more difficult to vote based on Trump's grievances and Heritage's own ideology that's been out there for decades. And so this has given them the perfect opportunity. They basically manufactured a crisis by Donald Trump telling so many people things that weren't true. And now there's this tremendous appetite in the Republican Party for trying to restrict voting access. And Heritage was prepared to fill that void because they already had the policy recommendations to make it more difficult to vote. And they could go to all these state legislatures and say, hey, this is what you need to do to try to restrict ballot access, both to help Republicans in future elections and also to placate Donald Trump and his supporters.
Well, we actually have that moment that you just referenced. So here is Jessica Anderson, executive director of Heritage Action, in that April 22nd meeting talking about the November election.
My message today is simple. We will not be deterred. We will not be deterred. And we are going to take the fierce fire that is in every single one of our bellies to right the wrongs of November and move it into other states.
So, Ari, let's focus on another state here. I'd like to talk to you about what you've found about Heritage Action's role in the Georgia voting restriction bill. How would you characterize what its role was?
I would say that Heritage was very, very involved in Georgia. Jessica Anderson in the video says that they wrote 8 key provisions of the Georgia law, things like restricting mail ballot drop boxes, preventing election officials from sending absentee ballot request forms, making it easier for partisan workers to monitor the polls. All of that came straight from Heritage's recommendations. They engaged very early on with the Georgia legislature. They testified before the bill. They had registered lobbyists. They mounted a huge campaign to pass the bill. 3 days before the bill was passed, Jessica Anderson met with Brian Kemp. We just got documentation of that meeting that she talks about in the video. And she says to Brian Kemp, don't even wait an hour to sign this bill. If you wait an hour, you will look weak. And in fact, once the bill passed the Georgia legislature, I think it was Friday, May 25th, Kemp didn't wait an hour. He literally signed the bill within an hour of it passing the legislature, which seemed like it was in direct response to what Heritage was saying. And so I think they helped orchestrate this Georgia bill from the beginning. And actually, one of the key sponsors of the Georgia legislature, a state rep called Barry Fleming, who basically wrote the bill, he was at this Heritage donor meeting. And he basically said, if not for the support of Heritage, this might not have passed.
Well, let's listen to that, because we've got that moment of the video. So here is Georgia state rep Barry Fleming at this Heritage Action donor summit in April.
I can tell you, back in February, I felt like some days we were alone in Georgia. And then the Heritage Foundation stepped in. And that began to bring us a boost to help turn around, get the truth out about what we were really trying to do. And I'm here in part to say thank you and God bless you.
So here we have a state rep, a Georgia state rep, who authored the very voting restrictions bill that we're talking about here, who was at this Heritage Action donor summit in April saying, thank you, Heritage. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
It certainly seems to me like proof of coordination at the highest levels from the dark money conservative groups that are claiming to have written the Georgia law and led the effort to pass and defend it. And the authors of the bill in the Georgia legislature basically saying, you helped us do this. And again, I think it's evidence that this was not about some organic attempt to try to address election integrity. This was about trying to put in place a long-standing Republican ideology of trying to make it harder to vote and exporting that agenda from Washington to the states. And Georgia was the key battleground because they knew if they could do this in Georgia, they could basically do it anywhere. And that's exactly what happened. After Georgia passed this law, it became the template for what has been passed in places like Florida, what has been introduced in states like Texas. And so Georgia became the epicenter of the battle for voting rights. And Heritage was more involved in drafting the legislation in Georgia than in any other state that we've been able to document.
Now, you report that Heritage is going to be spending some, do I have this right, $24 million to enact similar provisions in several upcoming states?
Yeah, they're spending $24 million in 8 battleground states to try to write these bills, pass these bills, and then defend them. For example, they've gone up on TV For example, on CNBC, defending the Georgia law and essentially targeting the companies that criticized the Georgia bill, what Jessica Anderson calls woke CEOs. And then they are also leading an effort to try to kill the For the People Act, the sweeping democracy reform bill introduced and passed by Democrats in the House that's now awaiting a vote in the Senate. And so they basically have a two-step process. They're trying to pass these voting restrictions in the states. Then they're trying to block the federal legislation that would preempt many of the voting restrictions that the states are passing right now.
So we're going to talk about federal level in the next segment of the show, Ari. But in the last 30 seconds before we have to take another break, again, just to say, there has been some pushback, right? There's ethics complaints, I believe, at least in two states against Heritage Action.
Yeah, ethics complaints have been filed in Iowa and in Texas against Heritage for claiming to have written these bills but not registering as lobbyists. And there's actually an ethics investigation underway right now in Iowa. So there's been quite a bit of pushback against Heritage for their claims that they've written this bill and also for potentially not following the rules in these states in terms of how to lobby for these bills.
Well, Ari Berman is senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Smart journalism. Fascinating topics. Words that describe CNN's podcast, The Assignment with Audie Cornish.
Last year, the Army missed its recruitment goal. It had 65,000 spots to fill and came up 10,000 short of that target. Why is it so hard to recruit? How's the Pentagon responding? And how are the voices of service members on social media shifting the balance?
Listen to The Assignment with Audie Cornish wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking with Ari Berman. He's senior reporter at Mother Jones covering voting rights. He's author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America. And recently in Mother Jones, he and co-author Nick Sergi released a fascinating story, an expose of a group called Heritage Action. It's a political dark money group, an arm or sister organization, I should say, to the Heritage Foundation. And on April 22nd, Heritage Action held a donor meeting for its biggest donors in Tucson, Arizona. And in a video that Ari and Nick obtained of that meeting, you hear members of Heritage Action, including its executive director, bragging to the donors that they helped co-author, or help get passed voting restrictions bills in several states across the country. So, for example, here is Jessica Anderson, the executive director, in this video obtained by Ari Berman, talking about how she advised Georgia Governor Kemp to sign the Georgia bill as soon as humanly possible. And here's what Jessica Anderson said.
I was able to sit down with Governor Kemp 3 days before he signed the election package in Georgia, and I had one message for him. Do not wait to sign that bill. If you wait even an hour, you will look weak. This bill needs to be signed immediately. The state legislature in Georgia got it done, and you can help own this and cheerlead this if you sign it quickly. Do not delay.
And here is Georgia Governor Brian Kemp after signing the new bill.
I went ahead and signed it. to really put the debate behind us so we can focus fully on the rest of the session, and also to just help drive the narrative of what the bill does, making it easy to vote and hard to cheat.
Now, Ari Berman, not only did he sign it very expeditiously, he did it behind closed doors, as we remember. And I just want to repeat that you said earlier that you were able to verify that Jessica Anderson did indeed have this meeting with Governor Kemp prior to him signing the bill.
Yeah, I just saw yesterday, we didn't verify it, but I saw that Sam Levine, a great reporter for The Guardian, posted that he got Brian Kemp's schedule, and the meeting is indeed on the schedule for the day that Jessica Anderson said it was. So she did meet with Brian Kemp just a few days before he signed that bill. I remember he signed it behind closed doors, and then there was a young Black state representative named Park Cannon who knocked on the governor's door demanding to see the signing. And she was arrested by Georgia Capitol Police very aggressively, taken out of the legislature, basically dragged out of the legislature, and charged with two felonies in a scene that many Black lawmakers in Georgia felt like harkened back to how civil rights protesters were treated during the civil rights movement by police. And you had this image that Brian Kemp later tweeted out of him signing the bill surrounded by six white male Republican lawmakers for a bill that many people believe will make it harder for communities of color to be able to vote. So it was a really jarring juxtaposition, Kemp signing this bill behind closed doors with all of these white male Republican lawmakers and a Black lawmaker being arrested violently and in a bill that has all these different provisions that are going to make it harder for communities of color in places like Atlanta to be able to cast ballots.
Well, and that video of Representative Cannon being arrested by Georgia State Patrol troopers was widely viewed on social media. So here's just a moment of that.
She is an elected representative. Why are you arresting her? Why are you arresting her? What, under what statute are you arresting her?
Ari Berman, I'd like to have you help us uncover more about who's associated with Heritage Action. There's a key figure that you talk about in your reporting, Hans von Spakovsky. Sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly. Can you tell us who he is?
Yeah, Hans von Spakovsky is a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he has really been the driving force behind policies that restrict access to the ballot for the last two decades. He was a top official in the Justice Department under George W. Bush. This was a time when the first voter ID laws and things like that were passed by the states. And von Spakovsky was a very controversial figure. There was a voter ID law for Georgia that was basically needed to be pre-cleared by the Justice Department before the Supreme Court had gutted the Voting Rights Act. And the career lawyers of the Justice Department didn't want to approve it because they believed it would be discriminatory against voters of color who are less likely to have IDs than white voters. And von Spakovsky basically orchestrated the effort to clear this law. And at the same time he was considering this law, he wrote an article that advocated for voter ID laws under a pseudonym, which was a very unusual, ethically dubious thing to do. Then he became, a few years later, a member of this Election Integrity Commission that was formed by Donald Trump, when Donald Trump claimed falsely that 3 million people had voted illegally in the 2016 election. And then he created this committee on election integrity that was headed by Mike Pence. And von Spakovsky became a key member of this commission. He actually wrote to Attorney General Jeff Sessions and said that he wanted the committee to actually exclude what he called mainstream Republicans and or Democrats. This commission shut down very abruptly without finding any evidence of voter fraud. But basically, von Spakovsky has been pushing the myth of widespread voter fraud for decades, and he has been pushing policies to restrict access to the ballot for decades. And they talk in this video about how he's briefing members of Congress, governors, secretaries of state, state legislators on a regular basis. So he clearly is still a very influential figure in Republican circles when it comes to policies that would restrict access to the ballot.
Huh. And again, in your voting, in your reporting, you and Nick write pretty clearly about what steps Heritage Action has been taking. Just staying with Georgia for a second, you report that in February it was a representative from that group that delivered a letter signed by several thousand conservative activists to Georgia Republicans in the legislature saying it's time to rewrite the state voting laws. And that is what really got the ball rolling there.
Yeah. And first off, Heritage Action was very active in the Senate runoffs that took place in January. So they contacted 1.5 million voters on behalf of the Republican candidates. And then after Republicans lost those Senate seats, which of course followed Donald Trump's attempt to try to overturn the election in Georgia and to tell the Georgia Secretary of State to, quote, find 11,780 votes to overturn Joe Biden's victory, Heritage really sprung into action. They delivered this letter to Georgia representatives basically saying they had lost faith in the election process. And suddenly you saw all of these bills being introduced to restrict voting access, some of them very, very sweeping, that would have repealed no excuse absentee voting, that would have cut Sunday voting when Black churches do souls to the polls voter mobilization drives, that would have repealed automatic voter registration. Those policies ultimately weren't implemented because they were too radical even for Georgia Republicans. But a lot of policies that did pass the legislature, things like restricting mail ballot drop boxes, making it illegal for election officials to send out mail ballot request forms, enhancing access for poll watchers, those kind of things, those came straight from Heritage's recommendations. And they clearly worked very closely with the Georgia legislature. I remember watching a lot of testimony and hearing people from Heritage testify in favor of these bills, but obviously they were doing a lot behind the scenes that we didn't see. And honestly, we would have never known about had it not been for this video that we released.
Huh. And as you report, a Heritage lobbyist then, as soon as the Georgia bill was passed, met with Florida Republicans to draft a bill largely based on that Georgia law. And in this video from the April 22nd meeting of Heritage Action with its donors, as you report, Jessica Anderson, the executive director, claims that an Arizona law, which could, in your reporting, purge more than 100,000 people from the state's list of voters, she says that was, quote, straight from the Heritage recommendations. So, again, I asked this question before, but just to reiterate, she is making a lot of claims here. As you have dug into this, do you find truth to them, that there is evidence of, I don't know if you'd call it coordination or influence, but I don't know what you would call it, but Heritage's influence in the crop of voting bills that have come up in relatively short period of time?
I mean, there's certainly coordination. Okay. There's coordination because they're meeting with these state legislators and governors, their lobbyists are working with them. The language is coming straight from their model recommendations. So in certain places, it seems like they were very active, like in Georgia and other places like in Iowa. It seems like they've overstated their role. They were forced to walk back their claims that they wrote the Iowa bill after Iowa Republicans said that, in fact, they didn't register as lobbyists and they had no coordination with them. So I think it's both a mixture of fact and hyperbole. But there's no doubt that overall, the big picture here is that legislation is being passed by state after state to restrict voting rights that follows the Heritage playbook. Mm-hmm. And it either follows it indirectly in that the policies are similar, or it follows it directly in that they are either writing the bills or meeting directly with the people that are writing the bills. Mm-hmm. That's what's clear from our reporting.
Well, let's then expand our view to the federal level, because you mentioned this before, and it's really important to talk about. First of all, just listen to a moment to President Joe Biden. This is him in March expressing outrage at the state level efforts to make changes in election laws.
What I'm worried about is how un-American this whole initiative is. It's sick. It's sick. Deciding in some states that you cannot bring water to people standing in line, waiting to vote. Deciding that you're going to end voting at 5 o'clock when working people are just getting off work. Deciding that there will be no absentee ballots under the most rigid circumstances.
So that's the president remarking on the state-level legislation. But, Ari, you talked about the federal proposal, H.R. 1, that could render a lot of this moot because it would expand and protect voting access. And in this very same April meeting where you, from the video which you obtained, Von Spakovsky talks about specifically about how Heritage Action is trying to fight the federal proposal. Can you tell us more specifically about what they're doing?
Yeah, basically what Von Spakovsky said is that nobody actually reads bills on Capitol Hill. So they put out a summary of what they called all the worst provisions of the For the People Act. And therefore, that became the talking points that Republicans have used against it. They call the bill the Corrupt Politicians Act, which now Republicans like Ted Cruz are echoing. They are running ads against H.R. 1. They held an event in West Virginia to pressure Joe Manchin not to support it. He has yet to sign on the bill. They're doing another ad campaign right now in West Virginia, Arizona, Montana, New Hampshire, urging Democratic senators to keep the filibuster in order to block the For the People Act, because, of course, it's not just going to need 50 votes, but it's going to need 60 votes if it's going to clear a filibuster. And what's really fascinating about this is what the For the People Act does is it targets both dark money and voter suppression. And when my article came out, a lot of senators, including Chuck Schumer, Senate Majority Leader, talked about the Heritage story as evidence of the connection between dark money and voter suppression, and that you had a dark money group, Heritage Action, writing, lobbying for, helping to pass all of these voter suppression bills. And so to congressional Democrats, the role of Heritage is in fact exactly why the For the People Act needs to pass and why the issues of dark money and voter suppression are linked in this bill.
Mm. Now, what they say in that April 22nd meeting in the video, it's more than just making a list of talking points for congressional Republicans, because as you note in your story, Jessica Anderson, the Heritage Action Executive Director, goes on to say, quote, "Then we've made sure there's an echo chamber of support around these senators driven by your Heritage Action activists and sentinels across the country, where we've driven hundreds of thousands of calls, emails, placed letters to the editor, hosted events, and run television and digital ads." So how are regular citizens supposed to know if letters to the editor in their local newspaper or calls that senators are getting in their state offices are from real citizens and not these quote-unquote sentinels from a group like Heritage Action?
Well, that's a really good point. They don't know. And that gets to the point we talked about earlier where Jessica Anderson says that the legislation has what she called a grassroots from the bottom up vibe, when in fact it's not grassroots. And it's not bottom up. It's being driven from the highest levels of the conservative movement. And they talk about H.R. 1 in these very apocalyptic terms. They say it's an all hands on deck moment. That's what Jessica Anderson says about this bill. If we don't win this, we lose our republic, period. I mean, that is pretty striking language to use against a bill that would make it a lot easier to vote. And actually, if you poll the public, the provisions of H.R. 1 are extremely popular. People are broadly in favor of policies like automatic and election day registration, 2 weeks of early voting in every state, guaranteeing access to mail ballots, cracking down on dark money. These are very popular things. And actually, on another leaked call from Heritage that Jane Mayer of The New Yorker reported on, they were actually concerned that provisions cracking down on dark money were too popular among the public, and they had to try to message against them. So basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to take a bill that's very popular and demonize it and create this echo chamber around the demonization of it so it doesn't pass and it seems politically toxic, even though it has policies that the public likes that would expand voting access for all Americans, not just Democrats or Republicans, but for all Americans.
And, you know, so fascinating to me, as you point out in the story, it was just merely back in 2013 that Republicans on Capitol Hill did not like the right-wing advocacy from groups like Heritage Action. They said it was going to destroy the Republican Party, and yet now we have the Republican Party seemingly embracing Heritage Action. Well, Ari Berman, senior reporter at Mother Jones, he and Nick Sergi co-authored this fabulous story. We have a link to it at onpointradio.org. Thank you, Ari. This is On Point.